I want to start with a story. Last Friday, I was in my constituency at the local Citizens Advice Bureau, and I talked to some people who'd been preyed upon by payday lenders. And there was a woman there in floods of tears. She was in work, but she took out a payday loan for her deposit so she could rent somewhere to live. And after taking out the payday loan, disaster followed. Because a payday loan of a few hundred pounds became a debt of thousands of pounds. And she still faces bullying, harassment, and threats from multiple payday lenders. There was also a young mum I met there who described sitting at home with her daughter and seeing an advert on the TV for a payday lender. She said she was down to the last nappy for her baby, and she took out the payday loan. And one again led to many more, with her ending up spending most of the money she had each week on repayments and charges. And in fact, she was so frightened by the harassment that she was facing that she gave her mobile phone to her mum, and her mum was actually there, and showed me that she'd had 15 calls that day from the payday lenders. Now, the woman who worked at my local CAB said the problem had got far, far worse in the last couple of years. She said to me, and the words that really stuck in my mind, payday lenders are running riot through this community. Now, yesterday, as some of you may have seen, Wonga released a film all about themselves. It tells a different story, I think it's fair to say. Last night, the boss of Wonga said he was speaking for the silent majority who are happy with their service. But the truth is, he wants us to stay silent about a company where in 1 year alone, their bad debts reached £120 million. An industry in which 7 out of 10 customers said they regretted taking out a loan, with half saying they couldn't pay it back. Payday lenders don't speak for the silent majority. They are responsible for a quiet crisis of thousands of families trapped in unpayable debt right across our country. And the Wonga economy is one of the worst symbols we have of the cost of living crisis. And the Labour Party is going to speak up for those people and people right across the country facing this cost of living crisis. Now, as I listened to those stories, my overwhelming thought was this: how is this being allowed to happen in Britain in 2013? Because these stories about payday lenders are just one part of the cost of living crisis facing our country. And what's this about? It's about low-skilled jobs, it's about wages that are stagnating, and it's about predatory behavior by some companies. This isn't just an issue for the low-paid. It affects the squeezed middle just as much. A country where a few at the top do well and everyone else struggles. This is not just an issue facing Britain. It is the issue facing Britain. It's about who our country is run for, how it is run, and whether we believe we can do better than this. Now, I do. David Cameron said recently that I wanted to talk about the cost of living crisis because I didn't want to talk about economic policy. So we have a Prime Minister who thinks we can detach our national economic success from the success of Britain's families and businesses. He doesn't seem to realise there's no such thing as a successful economy which doesn't carry Britain's families with it. And he obviously doesn't get that the old link between growth and living standards is just broken. Growth without national prosperity is not economic success. The first and last test of economic policy is whether living standards for ordinary families are truly rising. And you know, the scale of the problem is familiar to millions of people in our country. The official figures say that on average, working people are £1,500 a year worse off than they were at the election. And it has happened because prices are rising faster than wages. In 39 out of the 40 months that David Cameron has been Prime Minister. But the average doesn't really actually tell you the story. It's even worse than that. We don't just need average wages to creep higher than prices. For people to be genuinely better off, we have to do a lot better than that. And let me explain why. It's because ordinary families are hit harder than average by higher prices. They rely more on expensive basic necessities like electricity and gas, and that's hidden by the average figures. And ordinary families do worse than the average when it comes to wage increases, because those increases are scooped up by a few at the top. Chief executive pay went up 7% last year when everyone else's wages were falling. So we can't just make do and mend. And that means we can't just carry on as we are. We have to permanently restore the link between growth and living standards for all of Britain's working people. Now, this government can't do it. And the reason is quite simple, actually. It's because they're wedded to Britain competing in a race to the bottom. Just listen to their silence in the last couple of days on our plans for a living wage. Nothing to say. On the falling value of the minimum wage, nothing to say. On 0 hours contracts, they've got nothing to say. On the exploitation of low-skill migration, which undercuts wages, nothing to say. Nothing to say on any of these issues which are fundamental to people's lives in this country. They're silent because of what they believe in. And I think there's a clue in what George Osborne said to the Conservative Party conference. He described my argument that they believed in a race to the bottom as something straight out of, and I quote, Karl Marx and Das Kapital. Heard that rather a lot in recent weeks. My dad might have quite liked it. But George Osborne is wrong. It's about what's happening in this capital city, right here, right now, and towns and cities right across our country. Now, they really think this low-wage economy is the best we can do, because they believe doing anything about it means intervening in markets that we shouldn't. And this is a fundamental point for the future of our country. See, I disagree. A dynamic market economy with profitable private sector companies is essential for creating the wealth we need. But markets always have rules. The question is, what do those rules encourage? What do they allow? Do they encourage companies to compete to create high-skill, high-wage jobs as part of a race to the top and provide the support they need to do so? Or do they encourage a race to the bottom in low wages and low skills? Do the rules mend broken markets? Or allow some firms to take advantage of broken markets and exploit everybody else? All governments actually set rules for what they want to see. This government does intervene in markets, but in the wrong way. They make it easier to fire people. They water down rights for agency workers. They turn a blind eye to the failure to pay the minimum wage. All of that is intervention in the market, pushing companies to compete on low skills and low wages. They introduce tax cuts for the richest, defend bonuses for the bankers, stand up for the powerful few, supporting their belief, intervening, because they believe that wealth will trickle down from those at the top to everybody else. Don't believe it when they say they are stepping away, because actually they're stepping in all the time, stepping in to stand up for the wrong people. It's what I said in my conference speech: high hopes for those at the top, low expectations for everyone else. A race to the bottom, when what we need is a race to the top. Now, to win that race to the top, we're going to have to start by earning and growing our way out of this cost of living crisis. Not by spending money we don't have, because we have to bring the deficit down, but by building a different kind of economy, one that really works for working people. It starts with the jobs our country creates. David Cameron, as you may have noticed, is still on his lap of honour to celebrate how brilliantly he's done in the slowest recovery for 100 years. We still face a massive challenge of creating jobs in this country. There are still nearly 2.5 million people out of work, nearly 1 million young people. And when we look at the jobs in our economy, too many are low-paid, part-time and temporary. Half of new jobs have been in low-paid sectors of the economy. We have 1.4 million people working part-time when they want full-time work, more than ever before. And we've got more people in a temporary job because they can't find a permanent one. That is the reality of work for many people in Britain today. Now, the Tories don't think we can do anything about it, but they think we've got to compete with China and India that way. But they're wrong. A Labour government will put all of our effort into winning a race to the top. And that means taking action on both the quantity and quality of jobs. We can only win a race to the top if we transform our vocational education system and apprenticeships in this country, which is what we will do. We can only win a race to the top if we radically transform the way we support business in every part of the country with a regional banking system, which is what we will do. We can only win a race to the top if we support small businesses and lighten the load of business rates, which is what we will do. We can only win a race to the top if we support parents who want to work with at least 25 hours nursery education for 3- and 4-year-olds, for working parents, which is what we will do. And we can only win a race to the top with a proper industrial policy, including environmental jobs, which is what we will do. All this is about re-engineering the British economy so that we make a difference to the kind of jobs we create. You can't do it if you believe in a race to the bottom. You can only do it if you believe in a race to the top. So dealing with the cost of living crisis starts with jobs, but it's also about wages. Wages for millions of people have been in decline for far too long. Working Britain needs a pay rise. I'm talking about people battling to do the right thing and struggling and struggling. Hard, honest work in supermarkets, on building sites, in call centres, working harder for longer for less. We have a low pay emergency in this country. 5 million people now pay less than the living wage, working for their poverty. Up at least 1.4 million in just the last 4 years, to 1 in 5 of all employed workers. You know, more of Britain's poor children today are brought up in working families than in jobless families. And low wages aren't just bad for working people, because they cost money as well, as the country has to subsidise more and more low-paid jobs with higher and higher tax credits and benefits. The government now pays out more on tax credits and benefits to those in work than to those out of work. So to those who say we can't afford to do anything about wages in our country today, I say we can't afford not to. And many businesses now recognise that a low-pay economy is bad for them as well. I was in Bristol last Thursday talking to cleaners who are paid the living wage. They told me how proud they were to work for a firm like that. And better pay means lower turnover of staff, higher productivity. In fact, you had cleaners at other firms wanting to come and work at that firm to get that higher wage. So we have to end the scandal of poverty pay in this country. We would strengthen the minimum wage, which has lost 5% of its value under this government. We're looking at the case for higher minimum wages in particular sectors, like financial services. And we'll go further. It's why the next Labour government, from its first day in office, will offer make work pay contracts to all employers. It's a simple deal. For the first year of a Labour government, we will say to every firm, you start to make work pay through a living wage, and we will give you a 12-month tax rebate of 32p extra for every pound they spend. Make work pay contracts will raise wages, keep the benefit bill down, and tackle the cost of living crisis. It's a good deal for workers, business, and the taxpayer too. And by tackling low pay, we won't just strengthen our economy, we'll strengthen our society too. It's just not good for our country for people to be working 60 or 70 hours a week, doing 2 or 3 jobs. We'll change it. Under a One Nation Labour government, work will pay. So it's about jobs, it's about wages, and it's also about ensuring that markets work for working people. And that means fixing markets when they're broken. You know, the power station that we're in today was built in the 1920s after a Conservative government intervened to fix a broken energy market. The government of Stanley Baldwin. They knew that if government didn't fix broken markets, nobody else was going to. Stanley Baldwin knew it. Sir John Major, as he showed recently, seems to understand it. But David Cameron doesn't. His response to Labour's energy price freeze shows just how out of the mainstream he is. He took issue with the whole idea of government intervening in a broken market. And ever since on energy, as you may have noticed, he seems to have had a different policy every day of the week. But what we know is we can never expect him to stand up to the energy companies. It's not who David Cameron is. It's not what he does. He stands up to the weak, not the strong. For the next 18 months, people will hear scare stories from the unholy alliance of the energy companies and David Cameron, the big seven. And it'll just reinforce in people's minds who he stands up for, the six large energy companies, not the 60 million people of Britain. Today, new figures confirm that most of the recent price rises weren't caused by government levies or a rise in wholesale prices, but are the direct result of a broken market. For the average increase in the price for electricity and gas since 2011, over half went straight to the costs and profits of the companies themselves. This shows exactly why we need a price freeze now, because only a price freeze will protect customers while we reset the market. A price freeze until 2017 will happen if Labour wins the election. A freeze that will benefit 27 million families and 2.4 million businesses. It is workable and it will happen. And tomorrow Parliament will vote on that price freeze. So Conservative and Liberal Democrat members of Parliament could vote for it now. And if they line up against it, the British people will know the truth. The government is on the side of the big energy companies, not hard-pressed families. And our price freeze until 2017 will pave the way for us radically to improve the energy market for the long term. We'll publish an energy green paper for a regulator that can cut unjustified price rises, a ring fence between generation and supply of the energy companies, forcing energy companies to trade the energy they produce in the open market, and a new simple tariff structure. So we will change the way the energy market works in a way that will provide confidence for investors and a better deal for consumers. And we will mend other markets that aren't working in the public interest. Opening up competition in banking, a cap on the cost of credit and payday lending, proper regulation of our train companies, ending unjustified charges and fees in the private rented sector, and new social tariffs in the water industry. Today I gather that the government has said they're getting tough on the water industry. What does that mean? They're writing a letter to them, saying, could they be a bit nicer? That is their version of getting tough. Actually, what they should be doing is saying that these companies have to have mandatory social tariffs to help vulnerable customers. And they should be looking at the whole way that that industry is working. That's what a government that was determined to fix broken markets would be doing. But the Conservative Party defends broken markets and the people that profit from them. I am proud that the Labour Party stands up for markets that work for working people. The next general election will offer a big choice. A choice about whether we tackle the cost of living crisis or shrug our shoulders. A choice about whether we run a race to the top or a race to the bottom. A choice about whether we reform broken markets or defend them. A choice about how we succeed as a country. Above all, the choice will be about who this country is run for. There is a Tory vision of Britain that has low expectations for what most people should be able to expect. Payday lenders can prey on the vulnerable. Millions of families see stagnating living standards. Energy companies can just carry on as they are, ripping off customers. My vision is different. We can run Britain in a different way, different from the past, building a different future for our country, where ordinary people feel the country is run for them, in their interests and for their future, earning our way to a better standard of living, sharing rewards fairly, and making markets work for people, not the other way around. Britain can do better than this, and that's what a One Nation Labour government will do. Thank you very much.